Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today with Father Michael Roach, who is helping us learn a little bit about the Archbishops of Baltimore, as today we discuss the 12th Archbishop, Archbishop Lawrence Sheehan, who would join the College of Cardinals and become only the second Archbishop of Baltimore to have that honor. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Honored to be here.
So you were ordained by Archbishop Sheehan, and so have some personal recollections of him. So what do we know about Lawrence Sheehan?
Well, luckily he left us a wonderful autobiography, and you could pull a lot out of that. But he's a true Baltimorean, born around Greenman Avenue and 22nd Street in St. Anne's Parish. It was one of the great parishes of the diocese that produced all sorts of bishops and the like, and priests and nuns. He speaks very fondly of his childhood years and the influence that the priests had on him. Father Bart Hartwell was particularly influential on him, and he goes to St. Charles in Ellicott City. Now, I think he was old enough to have gone to the one in Ellicott City before Catonsville, and tells a great story. He said he was a skinny little homesick kid, and Joe Ells was a big strapping football player from Ellicott City, and he sort of took him under his wing and was really good to him. He never forgot that kindness. Mm-hmm. He was a man who never forgot a kindness.
And was small in stature.
Right. Yeah, he was. Didn't have great health. He fought the consumption a bit when he was young and had to go up to Sibyllisville for a bit and take the cure at the great Victor Cullen Institution there. But he didn't stay there. He stayed at the Mount, and at the end of his 6 months, he went to the Mount and he said, "I want to settle up." And the treasurer, priest treasurer, said to him, "Sheehan, the day we charge our priests for staying here is the day we close the doors. Get out of here." He loved to tell that story.
The autobiography you mentioned was titled A Blessing of Years. And he once said, "Everyone wants to know how I get things done. Well, I am a small man, and people always think that I need help getting things done, so I let them."
Very good. He's very wise. He was very wise.
So we're in the period where civil rights is obviously an issue of the day
in his time.
And he is still today remembered as being a champion for civil rights and famously testified before the city council on open housing and the like. So what are your...
It was booed, as a matter of fact, at the war memorial.
Lustily, if I remember.
Yes, for taking his courageous stance. He had a great social consciousness, though, had been developed early on. He ran Catholic Charities in Washington when he was stationed at St. Patrick's over there, and he had a great heart for the poor, and he was very enlightened racially, which not all of our archbishops were.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to personally testifying, he also creates and establishes the Archdiocesan
Urban Commission,
right? And how did that come about, and what do you recall about its work and its charge?
Well, it was still functioning when I was a city pastor, as a matter of fact, so we worked a lot with him. There would be an urban vicar. I think Cardinal Stafford actually was one of the urban vicars, living at St. Peter's on the third floor back at that time. It did an awful lot of work for their constituency and brought the needs of quiet communities to the foreground and let the church know, the broader church know, that indeed there was great need in the city of Baltimore. At the same time, talking about the strengths the incredible strengths and resilience of the minority communities.
Was it any surprise to you that his Episcopal motto was all things in charity?
No, he was truly a man of great personal charity. For example, he gave his entire retirement bursts to the poor schools and the poor Catholic schools in the city of Baltimore.
Mm, yeah. That's amazing. He has a wonderful combination of experience, I think, that really helps you see how he could be as effective as he was. You mentioned he'd served as the head of Catholic Charities in Washington. This was during World War II,
right?
A challenging time, and while also serving as the parish priest at St. Patrick's. And he had a doctorate in theology from Urbana University in Rome. So this is a pretty well-rounded individual.
Oh, yes, yes. He was scholarly but not stuffy about it, you know.
You can't help but see also the impact of his involvement in Vatican II and what that must have been for
Absolutely.
Him. One author referred to him as one of the giants of the Second Vatican Council. He attended all four councils over the three-year period. What was his role there, and what impact do you think it had?
Well, you have to remember that the American bishops at Vatican II were known as the Church of Silence because they had so little to say. They were not particularly aware of the great battles that had been going on in the European church. They were concerned with building up the church in the state. So a lot were not even aware of the theological contentions that led to the Second Vatican Council's resolving them. He was a scholarly man, well-read, Roman connections. So he spoke particularly on behalf of religious liberty. I believe that various Protestant and Jewish leaders in Baltimore thanked him particularly for doing that. He spoke very well on that. And I think he had the assistance of one of the Jesuits out at Woodstock in Baltimore County there, John Courtney Murray.
And it seems that one of the council's documents, Nostra Aetate, seemed to have a particular impact on him, and perhaps that's what you're referencing. He was one of only two Americans on the Religious Liberty Committee at the council, and the cardinal would demonstrate a great interest in building relationships with Jews and people of other faiths, as well as the issue of religious liberty throughout the remainder of his episcopacy.
Indeed, and like that, he was like Gibbons. I think that he got an award one time, and he said, "Any success I've ever had as an archbishop came from my imitation of Cardinal Gibbons." And that'd be particularly true in ecumenical circles.
He is quoted as once having said that, you know, every Catholic child in a Catholic school. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I guess it speaks to his intent on seeing the development of the Catholic school system under his watch.
Catholic schools are certainly one of his passions, no question about it. And he did all he could to ensure their quality and their financial stability.
As I read about him and think about all the challenges that he had, especially leading an urban-centric diocese, I think of William Donald Schaefer and the way people refer to him as a doer.
Yes.
You know, he was very
yes.
much a get-it-done kind of guy. Was that
right.
Lawrence Sheehan?
Yes, and by the way, he was very revered by the city government. They respected him tremendously, and he carried great weight. If he wanted something done, it would get done by the city.
It's said that he wrote to the nuncio upon hearing the rumor that he was going to be named Archbishop of Baltimore to plead his case on why he wasn't worthy. Does that speak to his overall humility?
Absolutely. That's the kind of I never heard that story, but it doesn't surprise me in the least because he was a very, very humble man. Self-deprecating. It reminds me of Archbishop Laurie in that regard. Yeah, self-deprecating sense of humor.
And
a great laugh. God, he had a great laugh. I still can recall his sort of cackly laugh.
His longtime secretary, Betty Sweeney, he showed the letter to her at some point, so she tells the story about him having written it, and this must have been many years later, and she was thanking God that he wasn't successful in persuading his case.
And I would never doubt her veracity. She was the most powerful woman in the Archdiocese of Baltimore.
The civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, the assassinations of President Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr., all the changes that were happening within the church in the 60s, this could not have been an easy time to lead the Archdiocese of Baltimore.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. And he was a big enough man to acknowledge his own shortcomings and foibles. That's one of the things I admired tremendously about him. And as I said, a great sense of humor.
Like Gibbons, was he the right man at the right time?
He was. He was. And had a certain entree because he was a Baltimorean.
What are your... As you think about it, people ask you about Lawrence Sheehan. What's your two-sentence
Small in stature, but a giant in so many ways, and led us through an unbelievably difficult time with grace.
That is Father Michael Roach talking about Cardinal Lawrence Sheehan, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. 8 young men, including 2 from Africa and 2 who have just graduated from high school, have been accepted into the priestly formation program of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, bringing the total number of seminarians here to 33, slightly higher than the average class size of the last few years. Ranging in age from 18 to 27, the new seminarians came of age during the pontificates of Pope Benedict XVI and Pope Francis. They are younger than last year's crop, which included several men in their 50s. The presence of 2 Africans is the result of a newly launched partnership with the Diocese of Kumbo, Cameroon. Under the arrangement, the Archdiocese and the Diocese of Kumbo will co-sponsor the 2 men who will study at St. Mary's Seminary in Roland Park and take St. Philip Neri in Linthicum Heights as their sponsoring parish. After their ordination to the priesthood, the Cameroonians will serve 5 years in the Baltimore Archdiocese, then have the option of staying here or returning to Africa. They bring a wonderful spirituality and a deep sense of piety, said Father James Sora, Vocations Director for the Archdiocese. He noted that the Baltimore Archdiocese will cover the expenses of educating the Cameroonians. For more information, visit CatholicReview.org. The Archdiocese of Baltimore has established a new scholarship named in honor of State Senator James Ed DeGrange, Jr. DeGrange played a prominent role in establishing the Broadening Options and Opportunities for Students Today program, BOOST, which awards $5 million in scholarships to students in financial need who wish to attend non-public schools in Maryland. Each year, the new scholarship named in honor of Senator DeGrange will be awarded to a deserving student with financial need at Monsignor Slade Catholic School in Glen Burnie. For more information, visit CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matusek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. Pick up the print magazine monthly at your parish or have the Catholic Review delivered to your home every month. You can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today in print and online at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today with Father Michael Roach, and we're just continuing our discussion on the Archbishops of Baltimore. And today we discuss the 13th Archbishop of Baltimore, William Donald Borders. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
So, obviously, Archbishop Borders, who only died just a few years ago, is one of the more recent archbishops compared to those we've been discussing. So, there are lots to remember about him. I personally had the ability to know him and to work with him, and he was a sweet man, a gentleman.
Right. Indeed he was. And he had the grace to grow old in such a lovely way. And his last years out at Mercy Ridge, he became sort of the pastor there. And the people related to him as they would their parish priest.
And that must have been a blessing for him to, you know, one of the things you give up when you become a bishop is the ability to be just a priest, which, you know, it's why you get into the business. And so being able to go back to that, no administrative responsibilities, just the pastoral care, the love of the people, that must have been a great way to age. And
it really was, and I think that's why he lived to such a great old age, too.
He did. Right. So he's an Indiana boy, right?
Rural Indiana, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But I guess when he was at St. Meinrad's, he was filled with a zeal for the missions in Louisiana and served down there as a priest of Baton Rouge, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, of course, was a chaplain in the Army. And that was a very, very formative experience for him. He spoke of that till his last years and formed great friendships there. Was very, very well respected and revered by the forces.
Yeah, he would often tell stories about his service there, and I believe he earned the Silver Star.
I think you're right.
It, as you mentioned, it was formative for him in many, many ways. He was a simple man, wasn't he? He seemed to live a simple lifestyle. And
he appreciated and enjoyed living simply.
Mm-hmm. Right. And eschewed even the Archbishop's residence, which I believe instead chose to prefer to live at the Sexton's Lodge, which literally would have been the house for the caretaker of the basilica.
Indeed, Charles. Yeah, right, Charles's house. I visited him there. It was a lovely house, actually, a very lovely house, but it certainly was small.
Right. And today is the gift shop for the basilica to give those listening an idea of perspective. And he even was said to like to conduct business during lunch as opposed to dinner. And I think, again, that kind of speaks to his simplicity and kind of old-fashioned nature. So what were the challenges of the day for William Donald Borders?
Oh, yeah, the challenges were many, as a matter of fact. And he met them. I think again, his motto tells the story, I will listen that I might serve, auscultabo ut serviam. And he was a good listener, and he was intent upon listening to all the voices, not just a few, not just the select, but all the voices.
He was a very much, you hear the word collegiality, and you immediately think about him because he really did practice what he preached.
He did indeed, yeah, right. And established a number of bodies, collegial bodies, to facilitate that.
And wrote a number of pastorals, a royal priesthood. Yours is a royal priesthood, something like that. So was very, I think, focused on his teaching office.
Right. His coming to Baltimore was a surprise also. They were expecting the Archbishop of Atlanta, and instead they got the Bishop of Orlando, the first Bishop of Orlando, and I think he was surprised himself that he was named to Baltimore. This.
Why do you think he was chosen?
Breadth of experience, openness to the spirit of the day, a lot of different experience. He had been involved in Newman work on a college campus. He had been an army chaplain. He'd been a parish priest, so there was a breadth of experience there, which is always, in my book, a very good qualification for a bishop.
And we're still fresh out of Vatican II, so this requires a bishop who's, as you said, open to that experience and really applying the what came out of Vatican II in a way that people would embrace.
Yeah, yeah. Those were heady days, as a matter of fact. And he sailed the ship pretty well.
He is, you mentioned he was the bishop, the first bishop of Orlando, and during the time Neil Armstrong lands on the moon, so he, I think it speaks to his wit, mentions or jokes that he was the bishop of the moon.
Right.
Ergo.
Indeed. Yeah. He had a good sense of humor. There's no question about that.
And a great laugh.
Yes. Again. Yes, a great hearty laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I owe him a lot because he's the one who gave me permission to start teaching the seminary. I had to go see him. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, I think it's a great idea to get you out of the parish a couple of days a week, and that's good for you. He said, I did that when I was a young priest, taught a couple of days, did parish work the rest of the time. He said, it's a good combination, do it. And that's 38 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. He seems to have had, at the very minimum, the affinity of the priests. He seemed to be a man who was well-liked, certainly in his retirement years.
Indeed. The retirement years were really the crowning of his life, which isn't often the case, but in his case, it really was. He was Beloved. Yeah. Beloved.
If ever there was a grandfather, he was
right.
it, right?
Right.
Was he, do you look back at his experiences because he had been, he'd attended Notre Dame, was an associate at a parish in New Orleans, had been a chaplain at LSU, an army chaplain, the diocese, the head of a fledgling diocese, a new diocese at Orlando. Do the collection of all those experiences, do they help kind of mature him as a bishop and an administrator and as a priest even?
Right. They enabled him to have many different facets as the Archbishop of Baltimore. He was, as I mentioned, a great listener. He was great with the young people. He was keenly interested in education. His master's, I think, from Notre Dame was in education. So, and he was broad-minded. There's no question of that. And he was very inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Any formative decisions that he had to make? Were there any burning issues that you felt that were, you know, you look back on and say that they must have been particularly difficult for him? Was it there were still racial tensions? Was it the yes. flight from the city? And
right. And yet he was attuned to the needs of all the people. He only closed, I think, two parishes in all his years. So he really wanted to see people served and served well, and he did all he could to facilitate that.
So the final word on William Donald Borders?
He did a fine job in a very difficult time.
And a sweet man who like wine, got better with age.
Yeah, I can still see his grin. He had a marvelous grin.
He did indeed. That's Father Michael Roach speaking about Archbishop William Donald Borders, the 13th Archbishop of Baltimore.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues, and one-of-a-kind rosaries, the Basilica gift shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter, as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.